So I have a proposition for an executive order.
Okay.
Like from the top down, highest levels of government.
Donald Trump.
Bring back the death penalty for people that do U-turns at four-way stops. Have you ever done that? Pulled up to like a four-way stop. There's four cars. No one's really sure who got there first. And the one guy just might as well have his middle finger out the window as he just goes like, I clearly forgot which direction I was going. And just goes back down the street he came. It's like, oh my God. I would get on board. He would, if I could vote, I would vote for whoever had that as like, that was like their running platform. Oh, it's man. Like, yes, that's what, that's the executive order I want to see signed.
Do you think like natural selection takes care of those people though?
No.
Because I've seen a fair amount of people probably within the last month just going, like turning the wrong way down a one-way street. And I like to think like, what is the fate of this person?
I feel like, I mean, just living in the Silicon Valley, like the that ambient temperature of like sunny and 75 is like the temperature in which stupidity like breeds at and thrives at. So I don't think it's going anywhere,
It's true. It's really easy to live here.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to fight the elements.
Well, dude, imagine like that guy who's probably going to lock his keys out of his Lexus when he gets home. It's been, like, if you do that where I like, you're dead. Like, you got 30 seconds to like, you hope AAA is around the corner or you're done, man. Like, you're absolutely done for. So I don't, I mean, here, I think it's like bacteria reproducing. Like they're sporing and fucking like Apple and Google and all like the little nerd haven hubs. Like it's bad and it's gotta go.
Yeah. So like, we need to release some like grizzly bears in San Jose.
Yeah, yeah.
To kind of,
I mean, I'm not worried.
Kind of weed
it.
Out.
Yeah, no, man.
Dude, they'll think you're one of them.
I just call that my childhood, man. That's growing up in northeastern Canada. That's easy. Oh, that's man. The thing. And it's like, you know, when the world ends, dude, I already know which neighbors I'm gonna eat first. Though that and people who do Turkish get-ups. Episode 13.
Yes. Let's talk about hip pain today.
Let's do it. Yeah, we got a lot of questions through the Instagram, taking my shoes off. We're standing in the studio. Big upgrade.
Yeah, thank
those
you.
Those of you.
Engine Fitness hooking us up with even more audio equipment.
We're freeing up our prefrontal cortex. I think that's what it is.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's supposed to like stimulate creativity. We'll see. We'll see. Words. Yeah. Jin, Engine Fitness, enginefitness.com. Yeah. Make sure to check them out. Hip pain. Yeah. So we get a lot of questions through our Instagram account, Facebook, whatever. About just like sort of general kind of lifting maladies, common presentations. This one we've been getting a lot lately and they've been asked to kind of speak on it. So why don't you take the reins, start us off.
Yeah. So what we're going to spend most of our time focusing on today is that anterior hip pain. So pain in the front of your hip while squatting.
Mm.
So that's typically an anterior hip impingement.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's felt at the bottom of the squat or at that point where you're going from descending to ascending.
Yeah.
Right. So
that coming out of the hole.
Yes.
You kind of get that just like, yeah, I don't know about that.
It doesn't feel good. You know, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
But people usually just continue to squat and try to ignore it.
So in your experience, like, what would you say, like, the mechanism is?
For the most part, most people do not have an anatomical limitation, in my opinion, that's causing this.
So it more is, soft tissue related.
Exactly, muscular. More soft tissue, muscle imbalance, malposition kind of thing that's causing this to happen.
Okay.
More so than actual, you know, the shape of the femur and acetabulum, right? Which, don't get me wrong, it happens, but I think it's a much more rare cause than what we think it is.
You know what? And there was a thing that went around. Did you see this? And I'm not going to name names. Fuck, I so badly want to name names. No, but like, it was funny because this was one of the topics because you talk about like morphology, right? So how your bones are put together. Yeah. One of the first things that got me into like, you know, blogging and online fitness writing was a retort I wrote about someone that basically took that cadaveric study. Have you seen like McGill had like the cadavers and the hips and like, how people have to squat differently. Do you know what article I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It was called like Why Athletes Should Squat Differently. And it was written, I mean, if anyone listened to this and can piece it together and wants to like drop the name in the comment, by all means, I'm not going to do it. It was written by a chiro, but basically like I'm with you where it's like, I think there's enough freedom of movement unless you have some sort of serious underlying pathology or like something acquired where I don't think our morphology is self-limiting to the ability to squat. Like, dude, I'm I'm white dude genetics, right? Like knuckle dragon, Scandinavian, Viking. And by that morphology, that genetic sort of lineage, I shouldn't be able to dive bomb like a narrow stance squat. But I work on my soft tissue. I work on my balance. I work on my stability. And I can sit third world ass to grass with my heels together.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people use it as a cop-out, right? A lot of people use that morphology. Like, oh, I'm just not meant to do that. It's like, no, you're just fucking, you're lazy, right? So, like, what would you say your, like, the number one cause? I mean, it's multifactorial and it's based on assessment and not everyone's the same. But just a sheer numbers game, what do you think? Or what do you see in practice is the number one cause kind of that imbalance or the imbalance causing that pain?
Right. Usually it's, so to generalize very specifically, it would be weakness on the lateral structures, tightness on the medial structures.
Sure.
Meaning that those specific muscles that pull us into that position where we're having impingement, which would be our adductors, so our groin muscles.
Yeah.
Our internal rotators, and then weak glutes a lot of times will do it, and hip flexors, okay. Right? A lot of times today, people are working on the computer all day. They're sitting down through the duration of the day. So that's the position that we're kind of in. We're in that flexed, adducted hip, give or take the rotation.
Sure.
But commonly it is, you know, the things that will aggravate that hip are exactly what we said. Flexion, adduction, internal rotation.
Yeah.
So basically, a bad squat.
A bad squat. Knock knees. So and why are the knees going in?
Right? Exactly. And
unstable.
That's the glute weakness.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, so, would you call it weakness? And this is something I really sort of had like a preoccupation with lately is discerning tightness from weakness, tightness from tensile strength, weakness from instability.
Right?
Because, I mean, they're all kind of mixed together in this fucking jumble. And then you can kind of just put your hand in and pull it out. Because for me, the way I look at it, I think we're really similar in this, is like weakness is a counterpoint to strength, right? Mm-hmm. If you're weak, you're strong. But instability is a counterpoint to stability. Yeah. And I think those two are separate entities. And I think just, I don't know, I've spoken on this before, where it's like mobility is on one end of the spectrum, and then strength and stability get clumped together as a counterpoint to that on the other end of the spectrum,
right.
Where I think in this particular case, would you say it's like glute weakness or glute or hip instability?
Right. It's more so instability. Okay. And that's, yeah, I may have misspoke. It's very easy, like you said, to clump those things together.
Yeah.
It's people get it.
Sure.
You know, that's an easy way to explain it without really getting into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's whether it's weakness, instability, which it could be either.
Sure.
Or just miscuing, lack of activation.
Yeah.
It could be any of those things, which, I mean, essentially lack of activation will cause instability.
Yeah.
And I guess it could be perceived as weakness because that muscle's not firing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a, it could be any of these things.
Yeah, or in all likelihood, a combination of
the
three. I think that's another thing people just go, they pick a street and they go down it and they stay steadfast in that belief. So
it could be a combination of any of these in any order, any proportion.
Yeah.
And it's going to be different for most
people. I just know there's like anal retentive people out there that are going to listen to this and like try and kind of come back at us.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than like, I mean, we both put stuff up on our Instagram and stuff where it's like, you know, you're just trying to help people out, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, get a couple likes, couple shares, build the following, build a platform. Yeah. We're here to help.
Yeah.
Right, but there's gonna be some dickhead. Well, actually, it's this, and you know, as this study here is like, dude, fuck off, man.
Yeah. Well, actually, fuck you.
Yeah, seriously, right? Yeah, I have this the most updated research on the subject matter. Jordan Shallow et al. The conclusion was go fuck yourself.
Yeah,
it was just like
I put up a QL stretch not too long ago.
Yeah.
Someone comments, it's like, okay, straightforward stretch, you know, nothing too crazy. It's like, wow, I'm glad you went to school for 4 years to learn this. I'm like, dude.
Seriously?
I'm just trying to help people stretch their little back.
And it was 8 years, by the way. 8 years. Fucking dickhead. And it's like, yeah. I mean, that's social media for you. But anyways, back on track.
Yeah.
Shit, what were we talking about?
You're talking about anterior
impingement. Okay, so yeah, just like the different nomenclature between tightness and weakness and hip instability. So yeah, it's the, I think a common misconception is people think like tight adductors are like strong adductors, right? The medial structures of like the, you know, the hip flexor, the adductor, even like some of the internal rotators, TFL, anterior fiber, glute med, where it's like they think tight and they think like rock solid, really strong, where it's like those are hanging on for dear life. Yeah. Those are like, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark, just clinging to the cliff edge kind of thing.
Yeah, that's your body forcing stability.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You don't have that strength there to keep you stable, or, you know, strength through range of motion. So that muscle's just fucking hanging on.
Well, that's the thing I always tell people too, is like, at and around an unbalanced joint from a muscular standpoint, you'll never have a loose muscle. If you have a loose muscle, you need a surgeon. You don't need a chiropractor, right? Like, it's the reflexive balance on either end. It's something is tight because it's in contracture in a shortened position for too long. And the reciprocal or the antagonist to that is just like, oh shit. And I mean, the hip is a classic example, but commonly in the shoulder, like anterior impingement of the shoulder, really similar mechanism. So you spoke a bit on the soft tissue side of things. So sort of the muscular imbalance, glute, instability causing perception of weakness, adductors reciprocally tightening, hip flex position. Now, what about just as far as like cueing and positioning of the exercise itself, right? So the deep squat is kind of like the calling card of anterior hip impingement. How would you go about assessing the squat from a mechanic standpoint to seeing if it's just like just a cueing issue, right? Like if it's just a form problem first.
Which is very possible, and I think a large number of times with either newer athletes or deconditioned athletes, that's, you know, it's as simple as that. It's just cueing the squat correctly can get rid of that pain. But simply the assessment is, for me, the first thing I'll do is I'll watch someone squat. Like, it hurts in my hip when I squat. All right, show me how you squat.
Out the door, we got a bunch of rigs and bars. I love it. I'm the same way.
Not even a weighted squat, just a body weight squat.
Yeah.
You know, that's the first step always, is how do you move your body before how do you move a barbell?
Yeah.
Right? So,
That's good. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Cool. That might be on the Instagram. Yeah, that's a golden rule. That's the one I'm writing that down.
Yeah. So if they can, you know, keep good hip, knee, ankle alignment.
Yeah.
While squatting, then I'll look a little bit deeper. Sure. But if I watch someone squat, their knees are like clanking together, they're rotated in, they can't really fire their glutes in a squat, then that's the first place to start.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing you're going to want to do is maybe take a step back from that squat and start to train those muscles that they're having trouble activating.
Yeah, you're only as strong as the sum of your parts, right?
Exactly. So so that's my first assessment tool, definitely, is just watching them squat.
Yeah.
And if they can squat properly, then you have to take a step back and be like, okay, well, we're going to test some range of motion. I like to do active and passive range of motion of, you know, basically the entire hip.
Yeah. So of the range of motion of the joint.
Yes.
Right? Because I think people look too closely at the diagnostic criteria of the range of motion of the exercise and forget that, you know, our hips have a greater ability to extend or internally than the squat demands, but we're only looking, like, people look too closely at these large compound movements, squat, deadlift, overhead press, as the, like, the full, the be all end all of mobility. It's like, well, if I squat the depth, I'm fine. It's like, no. Cause I mean, there's the range of motion of the movement of the joint, the, you know, the six axes or the six range of motion that hip joint can go through. Yeah, as compared to just like an objective criteria of a range of motion of the particular exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, that's huge. Like actually breaking down what the joint is doing. Now, what movements to you are like that you see are most sort of indicative of like maybe not like a more insidious underlying pathology, but like what is the most common presentation as far as restrictions in range of motion?
Yeah. The biggest ones absolutely for me are rotation, internal and external.
Okay.
So I feel like, well, first of all, people spend a lot of time in their pigeon pose, their figure four, trying to mobilize that external rotation. A lot of people forget about the internal rotation, right? So you need full range of motion in that joint, especially when usually the mechanism that creates pain here are structures are being pinch between that femur and your pelvis, right? And the acetabulum.
Purely mechanical.
Exactly. It's a mechanical cause. So if you can free up more range of motion in that joint, you're not going to be having that problem.
Sure.
So the biggest things I'll see are, a lot of people have tight hip flexors. That's something I don't want to overlook here.
Yeah.
But a lot of times that's just compounding to the lack of rotation in the joint.
And well, that's the thing too, right? Like, people think we're very uniplanar, that a hip flexor is a hip flexor, and it just, like, we're very, like, people think we're very, like, orthogonal. Like, a hip flexor just marches your knee up, right? Or your gastrocs or your calves only just bring your, no, like, we're not built on 90 degrees, right? Like, absolutely. So, I mean, you talked about rotation, adductors and hip flexors. Well, I mean, if you think of secondary and tertiary roles, especially at a joint like the hip, like the shoulder, ball and socket joints that have that freedom of movement, there's going to be secondary and tertiary actions of those prime movers, right? The high adductors, which are, for me, some of, like, the biggest scapegoats I see, just because of the abducted position, like the very wide stance a lot of the powerlifters I see are in. So really calling upon those adductors to more or less hang on for dear life under such crazy amounts of load. But the high adductors, people forget about, right, the secondary role, which is said they're secondary hip flexors, right? Because it's not just, you know, you open up a netter, an anatomy textbook, or you Google it and you see two-dimensional depictions with, like, just single dimension force vectors, right? Like adductor. Oh, adduction is bringing towards midline. That muscle brings the hip towards midline. It's like, yeah. No, it's on, like, this hinge that moves on all directions. It does that, but it also adducts and flexes the hip too, right? So that's a major point that people need to sort of, like, take a step back when they try to assess their own anatomy. It's like, we're very multiplanar, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. We live in a three-dimensional reality, yeah. Especially a ball and socket joint like that.
Yeah.
It's not just going to move one direction, yeah, when you contract one muscle, and you're, yeah, never going to just contract one,
exactly,
muscle.
Exactly, right?
People think, oh yeah, my hip flexor's tight. What's your hip flexor?
Yeah. Which one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's not just one hip, yeah, flexor. That's, is it your, you know, we group together muscles just because it makes it easy to say, but that, yeah, doesn't mean there's just one muscle there.
Exactly.
Right? And, yeah, that, those groups of muscles are all anchored at different points, and they're going to leverage that, sure, joint in different directions.
And even within a muscle itself, there are different fiber orientations. Like the QL, for example, it's a lateral flexor at its on its lateral fibers, but the inner more medial fibers that attach onto the lumbar spine are actually initiators of rotation, right? So not just, oh, my QL is tight, but it's like, well, are you deficient in, you know, opposite side lateral flexion or initiating rotation? Because that could tell you what part of the QL is tight. So there's, I mean, a lot of overgeneralization is done on our part, I think, to make it palatable, to make it, right, to get that buy-in, to get people to start doing the things they need to do. But I think when that extra layer, when that's not being done, like, with a certain level of, like pre-thought, like, okay, I'm going to not dumb this down, but I'm going to bring this to a place where it needs to be so the job can get done.
Right.
And it's just like, oh no, it's just your hip flexor. Like, oh yeah. Okay. Like without any other consideration. So I think you really need to find, like, a practitioner that will sort of have that extra layer of knowledge that they're hiding from you a little bit. It's like, we leave you on a need to know basis. Right now, right, you don't need to know all of this intricacies, right? Right?
When so, big words start coming out, people just shut their brains off.
As our podcast subscription will show at this point of the episode.
Yeah.
That was too many words
no
with
one's
big
been
syllables.
Listening for the past 10
seriously.
Minutes.
Hi, Mom.
But I think what we're getting at, to put it in just, you know, layman's terms, we'll say, is that just because the front of your hip's tight, you're having that pain, that pinching, yeah, in your pain, yeah, doesn't mean you just need to work hip flexors, yeah, or you don't need to work stretches in just one plane, yeah, right? Something I love to do is I'll do a couch stretch, which is typically a stretch, okay, for the anterior hip,
yeah,
but I'll do it in rotation.
Love it.
Internal, yeah, external rotation.
Yeah.
If you get that internal rotation as you're in that couch stretch, you're, yeah, going to feel it in a whole different area.
Yeah.
Right? That external rotation, same exact thing.
And I do something similar where it's, so you, the way you're describing is you're rotating, just your foot position is different, right? So you're rotating the pelvis. We're all do relative internal external rotation in that extended position where I'll anchor my foot in one place, but then move my pelvis around.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just coming at it from a different way. Cause I mean, a lot of people focus on moving the ball in the socket. What if you left the ball in the same place and moved the socket around the ball?
Yeah.
Mind fucking blowing, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so I mean, let's go down this vein then. So we sort of have an idea of, like, sort of the underpinning mechanism of injury. Now, treatment wise, yeah, like, what's your go-to? What's your first one? Like, all right, let's try this one first, because I usually go with my high percentage stuff first, right? Let's come through the center of the plate with the fastball. Yeah. If I gotta get real nitpicky with some shit after, I'll reassess. But like, I'm pure numbers game. This is money. Let's go with this one exercise or this cluster. What is your sort of cluster of exercises, foam rolling, muscle work, balancing exercises? What do you go with?
Right. So there's going to be the stretches we talked about,
yeah,
which is I like to do just static stretches for adductors, for the adductor group.
So you'll like frog, like frog pose?
Frog pose, fantastic. Mm-hmm. You're hitting that abduction and internal rotation.
Yeah.
Two birds with one stone. And then like a pigeon stretch.
Okay.
And, you know, couch stretch. That would be...
This would be yours, go to.
Yeah, the trifecta.
Okay.
And then there's also the stability aspect,
okay,
that we have to hit, which I think most unilateral exercises are, sure, really, really good at. So two that I recommend a lot would be just a unilateral lunge.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, you know, whether it's walking or stationary, either or. And then a single leg Romanian deadlift.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I like, I mean, for me, I'm the exact same way. I even like the way you structured like the order where the static stretching was first and then you moved into the stability after. Mm-hmm. I think so much stability can be gained just from that transient inhibition of those tight muscles. Like sort of very for a brief moment of time, centering the joint in a way of like, you know, if everything's pulling every which direction, there's no real point of trying to stabilize a relatively unstable joint as far as tension goes. So, I mean, I'm pretty similar. I like that you put in the RDL because a lot of people I find are averse to deeper knee flexion or knee flexion and by extension hip flexion because of the pinching pain. They sort of learned their pain in a particular way. Walking lunges, rear foot elevated, Bulgarian split squats.
Okay.
I really like basically anything that gets the hip into extension is something I really, so like, the Bulgarian or the walking lunge, the progression I'll usually start with isn't resistance, or even with the stability stuff, it won't be perception of stability. Just get your stride longer. Get your stride longer because A, you're going to get that front hip into more flexion, but B, you're going to get that lagging hip into more extension. And one thing I'll always cue, kind of going down that thought process of like, hey, it's not just, we're not linear, right? We're not orthogonal. We're not straight lines. Muscles move simultaneously with each other through different ranges of motion at a joint. So when I do walking lunges, I make sure to cue front hip externally rotates, knee goes out. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like when people do lunges, it's almost like they're doing a sobriety test. Like it's just like they're walking the catwalk like one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
Where when I get them into a deep lunge, I get the front hip like, okay, think of lowering into a squat. Okay, that front knee goes out. But when you're technically unloading that back hip and extension, the tension through whatever muscle groups are tight or reflexively protecting that joint position are going to rotate. Once you unload and gravity's not like compressing that joint, it's really going to assume its natural posture. So what I'll see a lot, people take a deep lunge forward into like, say, the left leg, that right hip's in extension, I'll start seeing that right knee come in. Right. Mm-hmm. Because that adductor group and that flexor group, that the medial rotators are bringing that knee right in. They're up on the toe. It's unloaded. They're not really paying attention to it. So I'll get them to fire both glutes at the same time. So as they descend into the deep lunge, I'm almost cueing both of their hips like they're descending into a deep squat.
Okay.
Both knees out. Because if you think like, you know, the adductors aren't just flexors, or not just adductors, they're adductors and flexors, the pectineus and adductor brevis, the high ones, the groin muscles.
Yeah.
So if something is shortened and tight because it's flexed and adducted, then by nature of that, to oppose those actions, extend and abduct, right? Mm-hmm. So use that glute to abduct the hip. And so you'll get a different feel. Same thing with you in the pigeon stretch, where you just get like a different feel through the muscle groups, not just for trying to aim at a particular muscle sort of straight down the pipe. So those are two that I really like. Now, what do you self-prescribe as far as like homework, mobility, stretching, foam rolling? Like that's what people come in for.
Right.
I think that's the real upsell is like, what can I do at home? What like cool foam roller rumble thing can I implement? And you know what? There's merit to it, right? Like if the idea is to make that transient inhibition and that neurological change, then I'm all for it. But what are your go-to like homework assignments for people with this?
Yeah, it's not much different than what we just what we just touched on, right? The only thing I'd probably add, so like I said, the stretches, probably those same exact exercises. And I think you made a really good point of progression of those exercises.
Yeah.
It doesn't, progression's not always weight. It's, you know,
thank you,
range of motion, instability.
Yeah.
So you said with those lunges, you like to get people to take wider steps.
Yeah.
Something I like people to think about is, so
longer
steps.
Yeah, yeah, I got
you. I like to think about wider steps too.
Yeah.
So if your adductors are tight, that's going to keep you on that tightrope, right? One foot in front of each other. So if we can lengthen those a little bit, taking them through full range of motion, so stepping out at a 45-degree angle in our lunge, as opposed to just going, you know, that uniplanar action that we're talking about. So 45-degree angle step out and forward, nice long, wide step. You're going to lengthen those muscles, and then you're going to be forced to activate those stability muscles.
Do you ever progress that to a full straight lateral? Go 45 to a 90?
Oh, all the time. I fucking love lateral lunges. I think it's the most
passionate.
Oh, dude, I love them. I think
he professed his love for the lateral lunge.
Especially in CrossFit, I think it's one of the most underutilized tools for hip mobility, stability, and strength.
It's not a plane you guys... I mean, we're worse. It's not a plane we ever work in, right?
Oh, man, lateral lunges are... phenomenal.
Yeah. If you can deep hold a lateral lunge, like you're mobile, you're stable, you're fucking, you're a weapon. If you can hold that, like if I walk into a gym and I see a guy like, you know, 240, 250, and can just sitting there looking at me in the bottom of like a lateral lunge, heel up to the sky. Oh fuck! All right, y'all, I'll go use another squat rack, man.
Exactly. You can have it.
That's a dangerous. That's a dangerous proposition.
So that's something that's, you know, fantastic. Completely underutilized. And
I'd love to see people try it because I think it sounds really benign.
Yeah.
If someone wants to post their attempt at like a lateral lunge hold and tag us in it, we'll repost it on Instagram.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because I think if people, I can fucking do that. Yeah. Like, all right. Let's see. Let's see 30 seconds in a lateral lunge hold both sides.
Yeah.
Speed it. No, it's 30 seconds a side, 60 second Instagram video. We'll reshare it. Because I think, that's a great progression.
And it's phenomenal.
And I think the two, because that's a good progression of not just like range of motion like mine was, but it's also that range of motion is changing the stimulus of stability or the perception of instability, which is like, and it's something I've spoken on before where it's like progression for stability can't be weight unless that weight is prompting instability. Like if you were to load a lunge, both hands, it's a wash. Right? Like it's now we're adding resistance to the muscle, not instability, not deviation of our center of gravity. So, that to me, is huge. And I think it's so overlooked just in basic training programs, right? Like people want to jump right to the squat, right to the bench, right to the deadlift. And there's just, we're locked into fixed mediums. That's one, like for people who aren't too bad, I'll regress them just to like unilateral loading. Like I'm talking more upper body stuff, like guys who have some shoulder pain, hey, just do dumbbells for a week, let me know how you feel.
Yeah.
And then just that, getting them off the fixed medium of like, you know, that barbell in their hands being locked in and being dependent on the other side oftentimes clears them up. Like those are like pretty subclinical cases, but now anything else to sort of close off on?
I mean, just the last thing I would add in, I didn't actually get to this point because we've gone off on how awesome a lateral lunge is. But the last thing I'll add in is just strictly glute strengthening exercises.
Okay.
I like to do something like a monster walk.
Okay.
So that band right above your knee.
Yeah.
Get into that, you know, 6-inch squat or whatever, and then take 10, 15 forward. Steps forward.
Okay.
10, 15 back, go side to side.
Side to side.
Like you said,
I'm really glad that you just like, you kept it very transferable. If you would have said hip thruster, I would have just like booted you out the door. That to me, that's an episode. That's naming names. I don't give a shit anymore. I'm at my wit's end with this thing.
Oh man.
I think it's just,
he's going on a rampage.
Well, no, just what's your take on it?
Hip thruster. So the only time I would say I would prescribe that is if there's someone that can't even get into a squat like that.
But have you ever come across someone who couldn't get into a squat and their rate limiter was the hip, the anterior posterior movement of, or the strength of that anterior posterior force vector loaded by the glutes? I don't see it, man. I've not once in my, dude, I've been in gyms now 10, 11 years and been in gyms. Like, yeah. You know what? I think there's a difference between age and experience where people think because they're older, they know shit. But it's like, just the hip thruster as an exercise to me, from a clinical standpoint, I mean, I see like some bikini chicks and fitness chicks and stuff like that, like local competitors. And that is the only exercise I hear. Because for the most part, those chicks are on it when it comes to, think about the unilateral movements they do, yeah. Right? Those chicks are glute kickbacking, lunging, like they spend a lot of time focusing on the glutes. But the one exercise that'll bring them in, hands down, bar none, barbell loaded hip thruster exercise every single time. God. Yeah, that'll be, we'll save that for another episode. Now, closing points.
Yeah.
As far as like assessment goes, I think this is something that like we really need to decipher. It's like, if you really need to sort of be humble, I think, in your ability to self-assess. Because there are a little more, like, we didn't really touch on it too much, but more insidious underlying pathologies that you don't want to just have a quick fix. It kind of hurts.
Right.
Right? So I think, like, I don't want to send people off with, like, oh, it's this. I'm going to roll my adductors. I'm going to stretch my, or I'm going to strengthen or stabilize my glutes, and I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
Like, things like FAI, right? Yeah. So, I mean, we don't want to scare the shit out of people finishing up, but, like, FAI is more of a, not morphological, but, like, a pathology, right? So, femoral acetabular impingement.
Right. That's, I mean, it's, I think that's kind of more of an umbrella term.
Okay.
Which I think this stuff can fall under, but there's more specific causes.
Yeah. I'm talking more like,
yeah,
cam, pincer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You can't have growths, say, on your femur, yeah, or on your acetabulum. That's where your femur inserts into, yeah, the pelvis. So there can be bony morphologies,
yeah,
that cause you to have this pain.
Gotcha.
So these things that we're covering right now, this is like the fish net, right? We're throwing a net, yeah, out there. It's going to catch most things.
Yeah.
Some things are going to swim through.
I got you.
Right?
That's a great way to put it. Cause that,
so,
go ahead.
Yeah. So this is the, it's not going to catch everything,
yeah,
but this is the first step of the screening, sure, process, right? You're not going to walk right into your ortho and be like, I have hip pain, all right, and go under the knife. Right,
MRI, right? You know, fuck it, yeah, let's just go right under the knife.
Yeah,
let's go,
exactly, see
exploratory surgery.
Surgery, yeah, nothing in between.
No. Yeah, this is good. I like that.
So this is your first step to screening process.
Yeah.
Give it 6 to 8 weeks,
yeah,
right? It's going to take 6 to 8 weeks to make a real difference,
yeah, sure,
in these tissues, in your movement pattern.
Yeah.
Give it that amount of time. Try this stuff out. If it doesn't work, then it might be time to take the first step to imaging.
Yeah.
Right? And then that imaging will tell you, is there something wrong with my anatomy,
yeah,
that's causing this pain?
Yeah.
If yes, then, you know, surgery might be your option.
Yeah.
It might not be. There might be other ways to manage it. But this is definitely a good first step. This is a good starting place.
Yeah.
Is assess your movement pattern, assess, you know, the balance and stability in that hip joint. And then from there, take action to counteract those things, yeah, that are going wrong.
Yeah. I mean, always, always, always conservative management. I think with the perception of like conclusiveness of imaging, like people think that it's a very like N=1 kind of scenario, right? That, like, we talked about this before where it's like, you know, lumbar disc. It's like, that could be incidental findings.
Yeah.
Don't go look, like, don't go down that road if you're not willing to do something about it, because you could find some shit in there that it's like, oh crap, and then you start suffering from a diagnosis like, oh, I have a disc herniation, I'm gonna, yeah, be bedridden forever kind of shit. So it's like, conservative management always the way to go, and I think this is a really good template to follow for those who are suffering from anterior hip pain. So that, like, pinching pain in the bottom of a squat, try this. If you have questions about any of the exercises, I'm pretty sure we have half this stuff already queued up, ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so hit us on Instagram, Facebook.
Yeah.
Share
with your friends with your who friends. Have hip pain.
Yeah.
Or even comments. Those who don't. Even those who don't have hip pain.
Yeah, and even send us those videos. If you,
I'd like to see it. I would lunges. Be surprised if we see a single one.
Yeah. If someone could do one better than me, then we'll definitely.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Challenge.
Yeah.
Challenge,
yeah,
brought down from the top.
There we go.
So yeah, we'll close it off. Special thanks to Kyle Lundy, Lunderjack Productions. Be sure to check him out on Instagram and Facebook. If you're in the greater Toronto area, hit him up for all your musical production needs.
Yeah.
Engine Fitness.
Engine Fitness, enginefitness.com. If you guys need any fitness equipment, he's got plenty of great stuff, great bars, bumper plates, rigs, racks, benches, all the stuff you need.
So 5-star rating review, subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. And until next time.
All right, we'll see you guys.